Give me 1 second. I got to see if this thing works. Or else we're going to have to do something different for our sermon this morning. All right. We are good. All right. Now, I thought having to get through Acts in 3 weeks was rough. I'm having to cover Romans today. All of it. So, we're going to have to get going. In your studies of the book of Romans, what sticks out to you? All right, obedient faith, Ms. Lois. Okay, the difference in the law of the Jews and the law of Christ was one thing that Paul points out. He points that out in Romans chapter 1. What else? Righteousness. Now, within the book of Romans, grace is a major theme in the book of Romans. As a matter of fact, Martin Luther, he based many of his doctrines solely upon what Paul wrote in the book of Romans. He discounted some of the things in 1st and 2nd Corinthians as well as Galatians. But he based much of what he taught concerning grace and faith out of the book of Romans. As a matter of fact, Martin Luther was guilty of just cutting out the book of James. He just threw it away. So when Paul writes to the Romans, a couple of things he wants to get across very quickly in Romans chapter 1. He tells the Romans, number one, that he is not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. All right, what's Paul's message here as far as what he says there concerning his feelings toward the gospel? Romans 1 and verse 16. All right, well, he's not ashamed of it. All right, he's willing to live by it, he's willing to preach it, he's willing to die by it. All right, when we talk about being ashamed of something, what are we talking about? What do we mean? Sir? All right, something that you want to keep hidden? Anyone else? Ashamed? Something you want to keep hidden? Okay, something that you would like to forget, maybe that happened in your past. Right, especially in certain circles. Maybe afraid of the consequences of preaching it. All right, did Paul ever shy away from anybody as far as preaching the gospel? Not right. He said right. He says, "I have not shunned or I have not neglected to declare unto you the full counsel of God." He was not ashamed in any way. How might one say they're not ashamed, but actually show that they are? I'm sorry, Rick. All right, not speak up when they need to. Any other way? All right, engaging in activity by peer pressure. All of those things. And look, we're not facing anything today that Paul didn't face on that front. What all did Paul face when it came to the gospel of Christ? What might have kept him, or what some things that Paul suffered that might keep us from preaching or teaching the gospel? Was Paul ridiculed? Was he threatened? Was he taken to task? Was his name smeared? All of those things. He was beaten. They tried to kill him. All for preaching the gospel. Let's read Romans 1 and verse 16 and see why it is that Paul stood up so often and so strongly concerning the gospel. Now remember again who Paul was and the zeal with which he fought against the church Now he's with that same zeal, he's fighting for the church, maybe even more so. Verse 16 says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it," what's the it? The gospel, "is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believes," or believeth. Right, before we read that last part, how important is what he says here in verse 16 up until that last phrase? Alright, it's extremely important. It's the gospel that saves us, in other words, he says. Who does it save, does Paul say here? To everyone that believes. King James says, believeth. Okay, what does this mean? Alright, ongoing. It causes us, or we want to believe all the time. And he says, to the Jew first, and so Paul references here that the gospel went first to the Jews, and then it goes now to the Greek, or as it were, to the Romans. All right. So the gospel is the power of God that saves everyone that believes, the Jew first and the Greek. Let's go over to Romans chapter 3. Another important thing here. We see in Romans chapter 3. What's the verse most often quoted in Romans chapter 3? "For all have sinned and fall short," or "have fallen short," "come short of the glory of God." Alright. What sticks out to you in verse 23 of Romans 3? Okay, all, meaning all, everybody, all mankind, okay? What else? Okay. We all need the gospel, we all need to be saved, alright? Going back to Romans 1 and verse 16, the gospel is the power of God unto salvation, powerful enough even to overcome the sin of this world. Alright, what else about verse 23? Alright, it's God's glory. That is the standard. Okay, that standard, of course, is a lofty standard. It's one that we must strive to attain. Alright, Paul was known in his writings for writing about sports and athletics. Why do you think that is? Alright. To the Gentiles, to the Greeks, alright, in particular, and what did they set much store by? Okay. They're athletes. Okay. They're athletes. And in that regard, I doubt very highly. Athletes were, they set great store by them. And so many times as you're reading Paul's writing, the reason behind him using these analogies, these comparisons to, and the words that he used, like for instance, Romans 3 and verse 23, the Greek term that is translated "come short," or "fallen short," or any, that's an athletic term. It's talking about an athlete that did not finish the race. Okay? The finish line is 20 meters ahead, and he stops at 15 meters. And so he has come short, he's fallen short of the glory there. And again, same type of deal. They're racing glory of a crown, they're racing for the glory of recognition and this. And Paul says that we have all sinned and we have fallen short. We have stopped short of the finish line. We haven't gotten there yet. And so how important then is the gospel in regards to that? The gospel helps us finish that race, helps us attain As a matter of fact, without it, we could not attain that glory that is set before us concerning God's glory. So no matter whether Jew or Gentile, all men, all of us, have need for the gospel of Christ. All right, let's go to Romans chapter 5. Let's read verses 5 and 9. Romans 5, 5 and 9. And hope maketh not ashamed, because the love of God is shed abroad in our hearts by the Holy Ghost which is given unto us. Verse 9. Much more then, being now justified by His blood, we shall be saved from wrath through Him. All right, what does the gospel free us from? Frees us from sin, the wrath of God. All right, what's the idea behind the word wrath? Okay. Extreme anger. Okay, you're going to actually do something instead of just get mad about it. Final wrath, you'll die. Okay, what else? When you think of wrath, what do you think of? Uncontrolled anger. Okay. Paul is again using this word. He's again referring to something that these folks are going to be familiar with. Okay. What were some popular events or activities, do you think, during this day and time, that happened at arenas? Okay, boxing and what else? Wrestling. Okay. What about involving animals? You know? All right. Concerning Christians, sometimes, as we talked about before, Nero most especially, would take Christians, he'd wrap them in green animal hides, or he'd make them wear green animal hides, and he would set them loose in an arena, and then turn either bears or lions loose. And so, you had to fight these big, powerful animals. Something else that was, popular in this time, it had nothing to do as far as, well, it did, they used Christians sometimes, but was bear baiting, as well as, and this, not necessarily bullfighting as we have seen or think about today, but they would take a bull and they would bait it much like they do a bear, at this time. Now, this word wrath, okay, here's the picture that Paul is painting for the Roman brethren. The word wrath here really has the idea of a bear or a bull, that you've been baiting it, you've been teasing it, to the point to finally, as Jerry pointed out, it's going to do something about it. It's getting ready to charge. Okay? How many of you would like to stand, maybe in this room, and a grizzly bear that is angry? He's wounded, he's angry, you can see the red in his eyes, but you've got nowhere to go. I don't want to be in this room with an angry grizzly bear. I just don't. There's nothing you can do that's going to stop that thing. Okay? And that's the picture of God here. What does sin do to God? All right, He hates it. How much does He hate it? A whole lot, right? All right, it wounds Him. Jesus on the cross. It wounds Him. What does a bear do when it's wounded? It looks for what wounded it. Right? It looks for what as a matter, I read a story just the other day, and it's not just bears that do this now. Guy wounded a doe with a bow and arrow. Got to where the deer was, and the deer ambushed him. It waited on what had wounded it, and the deer attacked the hunter. Why do you think the bull reacts like it does in the arena? You're sticking it with the sword. He wants to get whatever it is that's hurting him. And that's the idea here behind wrath. Air, you've wounded God. And He is getting ready to charge. That's the idea of wrath. But what does the gospel do? It appeases that wrath. It puts salve, so to speak, on the wound. And so the bear doesn't charge. But rather it protects. So instead of this big bull or this big bear devouring you, it's going to protect you. It'll keep others from hurting you. And that's the idea behind the gospel, is to save us from that wrath. When one is obedient to the gospel, man and God are in harmony, and then there's no need for us to fear as far as punishment and things like that go. Turn over to Romans 6, if you're not already there. Let's read verses 17 and 18. Romans 6, 17 and 18. But God be thanked that ye were the servants of sin, but ye have obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine which was delivered you. Being then made free from sin, ye became the servants of righteousness. All right, what's significant in what Paul says in these two verses? You could preach a month of sermons on these two verses. You really could. All right, let's break these verses down. First of all, the first phrase, but God be thanked. All right, what does this teach us? What does this tell us? Give thanks always. Okay. Right? So, in that contrast, as a matter of fact, look at verse 16. Know ye not that to whom ye yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants are ye to whom ye obey, whether of sin unto death or of obedience unto righteousness. Now, also remember at the beginning of verse 6, or chapter 6 rather, Paul is basically, he's answering either an argument or a question that some have made in Rome. All right, and at the beginning of chapter 6, what shall we say then, and going along with at the end of chapter 5, shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? So the idea here that the Romans seem to have presented is, the more we sin, the more God's grace covers. And so, in other words, sin more was their thought process. God's grace will grow and cover me all the more. I'll be safer. But their thinking was backwards. Okay? And Paul says that at the beginning of chapter 6. Your thinking is backwards. Verse 2, God forbid, how shall we that are dead to sin live any longer therein? Your thinking's backwards. Verse 3, know ye not that so many of us were baptized into Jesus Christ were baptized into his death, therefore we are buried with him by baptism into death. Yet like as Christ was raised up from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in newness of life. Sin no more. Verse 5, for if we have been planted together in the likeness of his death, we shall also be in the likeness of his resurrection, knowing this, that our old man, the old man of sin there is implied, is crucified with him that the body of sin might be destroyed, that henceforth we should not serve them. Then drop down to 17. But God be thanked. All right. But being there the contrast. And then God be thanked. Thank God always for everything. And then only that. And he's specific here as to what we are to thank God for. He says that ye were, past or present tense. Past tense. They're no longer the servants of sin. But ye have obeyed from the heart. What's Paul talking about? You have obeyed from the heart. Okay. Obedience is fine between being a slave to sin and being separated from it. united in truth. Okay? When we talk about the heart, what are we talking about in Greek? Remember who he's talking to in Greek culture. What's he talking about? Is he talking about this? Okay. Okay. That is more into the bowels of compassion. Okay. That feeling you get in the pit of your stomach when something excites you or you have just raw emotion running through you, that's in Greek culture, that has to do with the bowels. Right? This area. Alright? When we're talking about the heart, when Paul writes about the heart, and we're talking about Greek culture, after all, what was the New Testament originally written in? Greek, right? When we talk about the heart, what are we talking about? The mind. Okay, you have obeyed from the heart. And so, what is implied here concerning one's obedience? When we talk about obeying from the heart, they have been taught and they had understood. Okay? They had obeyed from the heart. What had they obeyed? And this goes hand in hand with it. What had they obeyed? Alright, which Paul refers to as what? That form of doctrine that has been delivered you. Okay, that form of teaching, that's what doctrine literally means, teaching. That form of teaching that had been delivered you. The gospel. Okay, so when he says here, you have obeyed from the heart, that form of doctrine, how many forms? Alright, what words, because there's more than one, indicate that this is singular? That form is singular, and doctrine, all three of those. That it acts much like thee there. Okay, when I tell you to hand me that, you can't just pick up anything and hand it to me, can you? Now, on the other hand, if I say hand me one of those, it doesn't matter which one. But when Paul says, when you have obeyed from the heart, you with your understanding, you have obeyed what you have been taught, that form, singular, that form of doctrine, all singular. And so what we know this refers to, as we discussed this last Sunday night, concerning the gospel, it's one and the same. Okay, so they have obeyed the gospel from the heart. Now what does that do? Obedience with understanding, what does it do? Verse 18. Makes you free from sin. Makes you free from sin. Chapter 7. Someone read for us verse 6. Someone mentioned a little while ago concerning the difference in the law of Moses and the law of Christ, and this is a big test here. Romans, and we see that here in verse 6. Notice what Paul, again, the word "but," drawing a contrast between the part of the chapter and what we see here in verse 6. But then also the word "now." Okay, so again, those two, again making a contrast as compared to what was before. But now, we, alright, who's he talking about? All those that have obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine that was delivered, right? That's who we is. We are delivered from the law. What's he talking about? Law of Moses. Now this is something that was very big soon after the Gentiles were brought in, and that continued until the persecution of Nero was when this was really big. Now that's not to say it didn't continue, but from right after the time that the church was established on Pentecost to about the time of Nero, what was real big and what we see Paul combating much of the time is Judaizing teachers. Okay, those that would come from Jerusalem or the areas of Judea and would come and try to teach Gentiles that yes, be a Christian, you've been baptized for the remission of your sin, but in order for that to be a full effect, you also have to keep the law of Moses. And so that's why you see in the book of Romans, why you see in the book of Galatians, much of what Paul writes, he also has to combat it in 1st and 2nd Corinthians. Much of what Paul has to write has to do with Judaizing teachers. That's why he wrote the book of Hebrews. Okay. All of that has to do with those that would hold also to the old law. Do you have people doing that today? You do, don't you? There are a lot of folks out there in the denominational world today that say, in order to be a Christian, you also have to keep the Ten Commandments. Wasn't the Ten Commandments part of the law? It was, wasn't it? You can't make a distinction between the two. You have those out there today to justify what they do in worship because of what is done in the Old Testament. And folks, let me say this. Folks that do that, they haven't studied like they ought to. Okay? Because many times what you're going to find is that while God allowed those things to happen, He did not order them to happen. Many times. Okay? But again, there's a separation between the old law and the new law, as we see here in verse 6. Okay? We are delivered from the law, that being dead, wherein we were held. Okay, that referring to what? The law, right? And he says what concerning the law? What is it? It's dead. It's dead. That wherein we were held. Okay? What does that mean, that wherein they were held? Alright, they were responsible to keep it. What else might this mean? Okay. What else? I'm sorry? Alright, forget that being dead right now. The law was holding them. Okay? The idea here is that it held them prisoner. If you continue under the old law, what's it doing? It's handcuffing you. Okay, you've been put in stocks by the old law. What has the new law done? It's freed you. It's made you free. It's gotten rid of that. Wherein we were held that we should serve in newness of spirit, not in the oldness of the letter. What's Paul talking about? Hey, this contrast between the old and new law. Okay. Okay. Key word, and that's it. Part of it. The key word here is spirit. In newness of spirit, not the oldness of the letter. Okay? One is spirit, the other is letter. What's the difference? Okay, one's earthly, one's spiritual. Okay, think of it like this. Alright, let's dig a little deeper here. With the old law, could you just go through the motions? Could you just keep the letter of the law and not put yourself into the worship? And be right with God? No. You couldn't. That's what he wrote about, and that's what Malachi wrote about, wasn't it? Were they keeping the letter of the law? Yeah. Were they keeping the spirit of the law? Not at all. God says, you try to offer your governor what you're offering me, what's going to happen? They'll throw you in prison. Okay? So it was necessary for those under the law of Moses to also put themselves into their worship, to worship with everything they had. But what was one of the things that seemed to happen time and again when it came to their worship under the law of Moses? They would keep the letter. That's what the Pharisees did, right? Did the Pharisees keep the letter of the law? They did. I mean, they dotted their I's and crossed their T's when it came to it, okay? But did they keep the spirit of the law? No. All right, so when we look at Amita, and Paul writes, Hebrews writer writes, talking about the handwritten ordinances, okay? Talking about the old law. And what he's telling us here is that while the old law holds you prisoner, so to speak, the new law sets you free, but at the same time you still serve it. But you're serving a different master. Going back to what he talked about in Romans chapter 6. Okay? Now, the newness of the Spirit, in contrast to the oldness of the letter, where does our worship place? In a building with brick and mortar? Through your heart. Right? You've obeyed from the what? The heart. Talking about the doctrine, the teaching of the apostles, our worship, friends, doesn't take place upon an altar as it did under the old law. Where does our worship take place? Right here. The heart. The mind. Okay? That's why it's so important when we, in just a few minutes, when we get ourselves ready for worship, that we need to be thinking about that. We need to be looking toward that time that we're privileged to go to our God in worship. And we ought to be pouring ourselves into it. We ought to be giving Him everything that we've got to give in our worship. And that's what He's talking about here in Romans 7. Now look at chapter 8 and verse 2. Here again. For the law of the Spirit of life in Christ Jesus has made me free from the law of sin and death. Now, is Paul talking about sin and death here? He's still talking about the old law. You remember, Paul in another place says that he would not have known sin except it be for what? The law. Okay? So what's he talking about here as he talks about the old law being a law of sin and death? Okay, sin never forgiven, it's just passed forward, looking toward the time of Christ. The law of Moses, listen, the law of Moses was a bloody law. It was a law full of death. There are no telling how many millions, even billions or trillions of gallons of blood that were spilled under the law of Moses. Now, granted, it was animal blood, but still, all that death because of sin. And listen, the purpose of the old law, it was a schoolmaster, it was to bring us under Christ, but Paul tells us, again, he had not known sin except it be for what? The law. Part of the purpose of the old law was to impress upon its followers, to impress upon the Israelites, how bad sin was. That's why it was so full of death. And that's why Paul refers to it as such, as a law of sin and death. But what does the law of the Spirit of life, the law of Christ, give us? Freedom from sin, freedom from death. That sacrifice was made once for all time. Romans chapter 8, concerning the gospel, it frees us from condemnation. It frees us from condemnation. There is now, according to chapter 8, there's no condemnation to them that are in Christ Jesus. Our sins are forgiven. Jesus has made us free from the law of sin and death. In chapter 8, verses 16 and 17, we read, "The Spirit itself beareth witness that with our spirit that we are the children of God, and if children, then heirs. Heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ, if so be that we suffer with Him, that we may be also glorified together." What's the idea of an heir? Inherit, to inherit, okay. Alright, to the one to whom you're going to impart your worldly goods. The Mosaic law, but also the patriarchal law. Here, so to speak. Which one? Firstborn son. Okay, and how much did he get as opposed to his brethren? Got a double portion. Okay, so let's take Jacob and Esau, for instance. Okay, if it had been done like according to the law, as it should have been done, how much would Esau have received compared to Jacob? 2/3. Okay, so you got, in other words, you've got a pie, right? And you cut it into 3 slices. Esau gets 2 of those slices, Jacob gets 1. That's the idea behind this. Now, Jesus was what? Firstborn from the dead. Now, back in Romans chapter 6, Paul said if we are planted, baptized with Him like His death, we'll also be what? Raised as He was. And he says here in chapter 8 that we are what with Him? Joint heirs. So because He is the firstborn, if we are followers of Him and we do His will, we obey Him, we are baptized and raised again as He was, then we too are the firstborn. We are given the double portion, if you will. We're given heaven. That's the idea here of what Paul says in Romans 8, 16 and 17. Joint heirs with Christ. We'll be glorified together. All right. Something else that's big in Romans, when you put the book together, and we see Paul with this, is the love of neighbor and God. In Matthew chapter 22 and verse 39. God commands us to love our neighbors as ourselves. All right, the first great commandment, Matthew 22:37-38. Jesus says, "Thou shalt love thy neighbor," or "love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind, and thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." All right, those up, and he went on to say, "Upon this hangs all the law and commandments." Okay, without these two, love the Lord thy God with all thy strength, all thy heart, all thy mind, all of thy being, and love thy neighbor as thyself. Without those two commandments, what good does it do to say, "Thou shalt not kill"? "Thou shalt not bear false witness." "Thou shalt not, covet." Okay, everything else is based upon those two great commandments. Friends, we are to, God's children are to love God with every part of and every fiber of their being. We're to love God in a way that no other love can compare. We are to love God with our very life, if necessary. We are to exert all the powers of our body, soul, and mind into loving God. And friends, when we do that, when we love God with all our heart, all our soul, all our mind, all our strength, we will be ready always to do God's commandments. And because of our love for God, then we will love our neighbor as ourselves. The whole law of God, Matthew 22 and verse 40, Jesus says, hung upon these two commandments. That's it. Let's get ourselves ready for worship. And that, my friend, was the book of Romans in 40 minutes.